Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties, bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send us an email or a favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they are archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about being comfortable. And as we often do on this show, let's define what being comfortable means within our context, within the context of a seminar, a workshop, an alternative dispute resolution, a negotiation, something to do with bringing people together to reach a successful conclusion. Mm-hmm, yeah. So what is comfortable within our context? Oh, and I see we have lots of participation. Thank you all for being here. Thank you for coming and joining. It looks like we're going to have two areas of being comfortable, I think. I'm going to call one of them physical, actually being physically comfortable, and one of them like psychological, emotional comfort, being comfortable emotionally and psychologically, being able to get together with each other. So let's do that one first, because it is the more complex one, probably, being emotionally comfortable and with yourself and with the other participants in the group so that we can reach a successful conclusion, a successful outcome. Mm-hmm. So if we're going to have emotional comfort, and we're going to call this the group dynamic. This is true. We often call it that on this show, don't we? We say that the group dynamic needs to be good, that the group needs to be able to work with each other. So what is being emotionally comfortable entail? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Martine and others are using the word respected, that the participants are all respected and, I might add, respectful of each other. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that everybody is respectful and everybody feels, excuse me, already my voice is going, hello. Everyone feels important and respected. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now what does that entail? Alex and others are saying that it means that participants are treated equally, even if they're on different levels outside of the group. What a good point. The participants are treated equally, even if they are on different levels outside of the group. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We see that a lot, don't we? I do a lot of corporate work for international corporations, and I see that a lot of you do like military, and I know that that's true from prior shows because we've talked about all kinds of things before. Excuse me, took a sip of water. And a lot of times, the participants in the group are not on equal levels of importance, maybe not as people, but financial or work-related, for example, or in the military, they're different categories, right? Well, some are more experienced and seasoned and are higher rank than others. And so the people know that they're not equal. I mean, they know each other. They know that some people in the room are more educated, of a higher level, or can even impact them, right? Yeah. But within the team, everybody gets respect. Mm-hmm. Within the group. And that's what the leader does, because sometimes some of the people in the room are kind of reticent. They're kind of scared to give their opinion and to speak out because somebody else in the room can, it's more important than they are in their eyes, right? And that's why we take turns talking. Everybody gets their chance. Everybody gets their chance to voice an opinion, right? Everybody gets their chance to participate. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's true, too. People are saying that sometimes people in the room, some people are more outgoing than others. Mm-hmm. They're more of an extrovert. And they could take over the group accidentally if everybody doesn't get a chance. And sometimes the quiet ones sitting, you know, kind of, I don't know if I should say this, they have very good ideas. Yeah. And we want to hear them. And we want to know what they think. And also we want to know, we want to take the temperature of the group, right? And see what people are thinking and saying and what they can contribute. Mm-hmm, yeah. So everyone is respected and the participants are treated equally, even if on different levels outside the group. Mm-hmm. Suki's making a good point that we live in the real world and you have to have an acknowledgement of reality, but everyone is still equally on the team. An acknowledgement of reality, but everyone is still equal on the team. Yes, you can't ignore the fact that you've got managers and you've got interns. And sometimes the group is made of people who have similar interests. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes when you deal on the corporate level, the group is not, well, I suppose they are volunteers oftentimes, but sometimes the group is composed of people in a certain division, for example. And they're not really self-chosen. So you have the supervisors and you have the workers. And they are all in the group, all on the team, and they're all equal. Mm-hmm. But in reality, they are not. Someone could have influence over someone else. So you have to take that into account. You have to acknowledge it and understand how that affects the group dynamic. Mm-hmm. Edward and others are talking about, and we have talked about this before. Prior shows are archived on the website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Edward and others are saying you need a fair allocation of time to be heard. Mm-hmm. A fair allocation of time to be heard. Mm-hmm. And a lot of you are talking about the civility rules. And I know that quite a few people return every week. And thank you all for being here. Thank you for your participation. And we always have quite a few new people too. Welcome, welcome. Become our regulars. And the civility rules are very simple. And they're deceptively simple because, of course, they take some effort and some thought to enforce. Recipe for Peace Now has no actual rules, as in something that must be done now. But we do say that the civility rules are important to every group. They are essentially speaking, no one can be rude. Right? No one can be rude. You can't have any bullying. Everybody gets their turn. As Edward says, a fair allocation of time to be heard. Mm-hmm. We will not put up with any kind of disruptive behavior. And everyone is treated with respect. Yes, it is true that depends on the group somewhat. Whether or not you actually announce these civility rules, or even write them down, maybe, or they are inherent, they are understood by everyone. Some groups, that is true, you do not have to actually say that this is the civility rules, and we will now be accepting and enforcing them. Mm-hmm. Because you don't have to come out and say you can't be rude to each other, because they're not going to be. Mm-hmm. And if there's a disagreement, you handle it without putting down rules because the people are fairly in accord with each other. Sometimes you have a group that is highly, they're having trouble becoming a team. Mm-hmm. or there is one disruptive person sometimes, right? And so the civility rules must be overtly enforced, mm-hmm, and mentioned as such, you know, don't forget the civility rules type thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So a fair allocation of time, that's the civility rules, right? Everybody gets respected. Mm-hmm. An acknowledgement of the reality that we may be on different levels, but that we are equal as a team. Mm-hmm. And also the fair allocation of time goes also to a set time to speak. Mm-hmm. Yeah. A lot of you are talking about the fact, and thank you all for all of your participation, are talking about the fact that you need to set a space aside for everyone to have their turn, for everyone to speak. You know this if you've been here before, that I personally advocate, if we're going to have quite a few people in the group, and we need to actually deliberately set aside time for everyone to speak. This is not true of all groups. We've all been in groups where everybody is being respected and treated equally, and we've acknowledged the reality of little inequality, but we've made a team. And all you have to do is say, and what do you think, to the person that hasn't said anything in a while? And then everybody looks at them and is quiet and waits for them to say something, right? Yeah. You know, those are, you don't have to have a timer for that. That's just natural flow. And that's the best thing of all. The best thing of all is just natural flow. And what do you think? And what's your opinion on this, you see? And that's the best way to negotiate and to get people to participate and to know what everybody's thinking, to know what's happening. So that is the ideal. But sometimes you get a very big group or a group that is somewhat, well, at the beginning at least, because we handle that as we go along, because we're making a team, remember. Sometimes some groups are a little more, I don't like to call them contentious, but they're a little less together when they start, at least. And they need a little bit of help to get things going, right? And in that situation, you can have, especially if there's a big group, I've done seminars and workshops that have, you know, auditorium, but I've handled negotiation groups, mediation groups, where we've got, well, pretty darn close to 50 people in the room. More than that, and it's a seminar. But you've got a lot of people and a lot of differing opinions. And especially when we start out, because we want to know why everybody's there, really, and what everybody thinks. And sometimes you start out with more people and then it calls down to a representative for the group, right? Yeah, 50. Yeah, you're right. People are saying 50 is an outrageous amount for a negotiation. Let's think about the one of the bigger ones that I just did. Maybe not 50, but yeah, close to. Because you had a lot of kind of factions. They all wanted the same thing, right? They all wanted the same goal, but why and how to get there was the question. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what it should look like. You know, we all know this if you've got some experience, that a lot of times you've got a group that needs to have a third party impartial, which is us, a mediator, for example. And they all want the same outcome, but the reason that they want it is different. Because they're there for a different purpose. This happens a lot when you want to change the law. Because people have an interest in why. And what it looks like when it's changed, what the outcome looks like, what success looks like is not always exactly clear, especially in the beginning. You have to have everyone speak and everyone tell the group their initial position and why they're there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I actually go around the room, even if we don't have any factions, even if we're just a smallish group, I like to go around the room, especially at the beginning, and have people tell us why they're there and what their opinion is. Just a little snapshot of it. Mm-hmm. Yes, and also introduce themselves. Uh-huh. I am quite partial to name tags. I know there's going to be a difference of opinion here, because you either like name tags or you really, really don't. I'm of the like name tags category, I think, because I have a bad memory for names. And I see a lot of people over time period, and sometimes people come back to me as a group or as a employer or whatever, and it's been a little while. And it, honest to God, it all starts to kind of meld name-wise. And also, yeah, I do this professionally, so I see more than one negotiation, more than one mediation is going at the same time for me, right? And I don't want to jumble the names, so I am really fond of name tags. I wear a name tag all the time so that you all can remember which one I am, because a lot of times the clients, they see a lot of people in negotiations of different ones too. Yeah. So I think introductions are important, and to go around and say what we're doing. As we go along, if we see that we need this, mm-hmm, you can set time limits on speaking. Now, you can't do it on a certain person, even though someone may be kind of more extroverted than others, because that's rude. You have to do it for everybody. And then that will encourage the people kind of hiding in the background to come forward and tell you what they think. Because if everybody's not on board, they're not vested in the process, we won't get anywhere. And that's really the truth. You need to have everybody interested. You need to have everybody on board. You need to have everybody capable of going forward, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we need to have that. We need to have it really something that everyone can talk. I personally, if we get to that stage where we need to have a time set, I like to actually keep time, say 3 minutes, with something we all can see. I know this is tacky, and people send me emails, and I know there's a difference of opinion, but I like to use a cooking timer. It ticks, and then it dings, right? Now, some people find that very distractive, and they think it's the grossest thing they've ever heard of, but hear me out. I've done this a really long time, and people have no concept of the 3 minutes, right? They either go over or under, and everyone feels they've been ripped off one way or another, especially the ones that want to go over. This way, you can see it. It's fair. It's equal. Everybody has the same ding. They have the same timer. So you can gauge how you're going to speak with accuracy. And no one feels that they somehow didn't get their fair share. I'm fond of it. I know a lot of you think that that's really distracting and a stupid idea. But it depends on the group. Yeah, I'm going to say it depends again. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how else are we going to become emotionally comfortable? Mm-hmm. Everybody gets to speak. Everybody's equal and respected. There's an acknowledgement of differences, but in this group, everybody gets their opinion heard. Mm-hmm. But Tina and others are advocating the commission of subcommittees to research any kind of disagreements so that we don't have to hash it out in front of everyone. I find that the group is more comfortable the less amount of kind of underlying dissension, and the less the amount of nitty gritty process. Let's look this up online together. Well, let's make a subcommittee and research it. I do think that people should report back to the group what they found, websites and all. And if you're going to have committees, or if you're going to have the whole team, for example, actually research an issue, actually research what was done in the past, for example, on what was successful, what was maybe not so successful. If you're going to have that, then you're going to, I like, if they're going to bring make a presentation to the group, I ask everyone to send around to everyone the information ahead of time so we can look at it and study it and think on it and not have to put down our heads and try to read something while we're sitting together trying to get somewhere and head towards our goal. It'll bog us down. What I like to do is I like to have it disseminated to everyone, and then we could talk about it after we've had a nice think, after we've looked at the references, for example. Yeah, very important. This is a very good point that's being made, and sometimes we forget this. Brian says that diversity in opinion is not disagreements. It's part of the process to vet ideas. Absolutely. Especially when we start out, we will have tremendously diverse opinions. It's not disagreement. We're not getting contentious because we're obeying the civility rules, right? It's part of the process. And everybody comes in, including, I'm afraid, the leader, with some preconceived notions based, hopefully, on experience. Yeah. And that's not disagreement. That is indeed discussion and vetting ideas. And a lot of times, for example, you know, this show is not scripted. A lot of times we go where it takes us, and a lot of times we go to something that I didn't have in mind when I thought about the topic for the show. Really didn't. Didn't think about it that way. And here we are. Yeah. So diversity is not disagreement. Good point. It's part of the process to vet ideas. Yeah. You know, Padmeha and others are advocating creation of a mission statement. And those of you who have been here before know that I have a little bit of a bias because I don't think every group needs a mission statement if they're already clear on what it is that the goal, what it is the success looks like, and that we're all working together to get it, to achieve it. Some groups do indeed need, and the reason I don't think everyone needs a mission statement is because sometimes it takes a while. And you don't want to be boring and waste time on something that we don't need. One of the things that's being respected is you respect people's time in addition to their opinion. Thank you. Time is the most valuable product of commodity that you've got, according to Valerie and others, and that's true. So part of respect is respecting people's time. Now, some groups need a mission statement because it will clarify what our goal is. We don't always come in with the same goal. You know, oftentimes we act like, well, we know what the goal is, it's just a question of getting there. Well, sometimes the goal is obvious, put something on the ballot, although the wording might not be. And other times, it's something more complex, and we're not all clear on what the goal is, what success will look like. That you need a mission statement for. Because, as Padmeha says, you create the mission statement together as a team. Then we'll all be on board. So, yes, I think a mission statement might not even be written down, but just a how do we think about this and is this what our goal is, sometimes part of the process, an actual hashed out mission statement, and it will clarify the issues for us. I think that's the main reason for a mission statement is to clarify what it is that we're doing, that what it is that we're working towards, what success will be. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Stephen and others make a good point that if you're going to have a mission statement, you need to frequently review and modify the statement as the process goes forward. You need to frequently review and modify the mission statement as the process goes forward. Yes. What we think at the very beginning is our mission might be true. It has been my experience that oftentimes mission statements are somewhat broad and they are modified and refined as time goes on because as the process goes forward, we learn stuff. We learn what the obstacles are. We learn what the other groups have successfully done or not successfully. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we learn stuff along the way. We interact with each other along the way. We form new opinions along the way. And therefore, the mission statement is not stagnant. It needs to be modified and reviewed as we go along. Uh-huh. So what other psychological, comfortable ways to make our participants comfortable do we have? Mm-hmm. How else should we make the process a comfortable one, because the more comfortable everyone is dealing with each other, for example, the better the group dynamic will be and the cleaner and faster the process. We'll get to our success better. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how else can we make our participants comfortable with each other, with the group, with the team? Mm-hmm. You know, Goethe and others are making a very good point that you have remember to have gratitude for a job well done. Gratitude for a job well done. I'm very big on praise. I'm very big on the word thank you. When we end this show, I will thank you for your time and for listening at the end of the show. And I mean it. And people don't, honest to God, I don't think people say thank you enough. You have to remember, people are giving you their time and their effort and their thought, and they could be doing something else. And they really put out for it. You have to have gratitude for a job well done. Mm-hmm. I'm very big on public gratitude. I thank people all the time for doing a great job and for bringing this to our attention and for being so diligent. And well, yeah, sometimes the donation, this is true. But you have to remember to have gratitude and thank people for giving you, for giving the group the most precious thing they have, their time. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Shelley and others are saying that going along with saying thank you and showing gratitude for a job well done is that as you get successful steps along the way in the process, you need to celebrate them. So that we all feel encouraged. Sometimes the process is very long. Mm-hmm. And it's easy to go, oh my God, we bit off more than we can chew. This is not the time that this is going to happen. Mm-hmm. Yes, a lot of you have heard me use polio and rotary as an example. And it really is an example of a tremendously long process. Mm-hmm. And for those of you who are new, and also because a lot of us are Rotarians, polio in the world, bad thing, right? Mm-hmm. And the motto of Rotarians is service above self. And we go all over the world in teams. Rotary is divided into clubs, but even not the whole club goes. A team from the club goes and does special projects all over the world. Mm-hmm. There are Rotary clubs all over the world, and a lot of times they're local projects. But they go and help people. Help people who cannot possibly give back to you. We help people because it's the right thing to do. This is actually the mission statement. There's a four-way test. I won't go into it. You can look up Rotary if you'd like. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's a real service humanitarian group. There was a gentleman, he's still there, he's actually still one of my friends. His name is Ezra Tashomi, and he is a native Ethiopian, but he lives in the United States. And he's a Rotarian in the world's biggest Rotary Club. We're Rotarians together. And he saw that Rotary does good deeds all around the world. And he saw that polio was a very bad thing in Ethiopia, in his town, for example, and all over the country. So this is simplifying it. Everything is more complicated than this, especially since Rotary is a little bit unwieldy. It's got a foundation and like that. It's very big. But in any event, to simplify things, he went to his Rotary Club and he said, I'd like to propose a mission to go to Ethiopia, to quite frankly, his hometown, and bring the polio vaccine and vaccinate people so they don't get the horrible thing called polio and get crippled for life. Mm-hmm. The vaccine is not a shot. It is drops that you put in people's mouths. Nowadays, we put in babies' mouths. But it's three little drops out of a little squeeze bottle thing. So, long story short, that was the goal. To help as many of people as you could in Ethiopia not get polio, get the vaccine to them. It was a big goal, and it was well-defined. That was it. And then the goal was modified and expanded, and the process became very long and involved because we saw it could be done. And originally, the vaccine, which is relatively expensive, at least especially when you began, and in those days it was somewhat perishable too, we actually dipped into our pockets and donated to go. But then a wonderful thing happened. Polio was eradicated in that small area. And then we went, well, you know, people can come over with polio. They're across the border there. And they're unfortunate, and they've got polio ravaging them. Let's go to a different country. And so anyway, the short version of this is, we eventually went everywhere, dealt with governments, dealt with people, dealt with logistics, dealt with the funding. Yes, we had to get funds from the United States government and from other governments. This is no mean trick. And dealt with all kinds of individual, all kinds of obstacles, all kinds of pushback, all kinds of logistics, for many, many years. So the goal, which was big but doable, became expanded. The process became long. And along the way, we always celebrated each successful step because we were a team and we understood that each step brought us closer to what is nearly happened on the face of this earth. We've just about eradicated polio. Yay, team! And it was the Rotarians started it. We got lots of partners. Yes, I know the Gates Foundation has put in a lot of money at the last minute, and they're very public. And they never mentioned Rotary. Ooh, did I say that? We had to celebrate along the way, or we'd have gotten discouraged. And we had to modify the mission. It was still specific, but it was specific to each place we were going. We made concentrated efforts. Yeah. And then we made trips back because you had to vaccinate the children. And it went up and back. And nobody on the face of this earth is going to ever get polio again. Isn't that marvelous? Yeah. So you celebrate each successful step as a team. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Alice and others are making the point that there's a natural progression, and this goes to being comfortable as a team, because that's what happened. And we met all kinds of people that we needed to be comfortable with, and they needed to be comfortable with us. Mm-hmm. Where there needed to be trust and respect all around with Rotary and polio and all the other groups that stepped up as the years went by, and they went, wow, it looks like that can actually be done. That is something that we're getting real close on. Uh-huh, yeah. And Alice and others are pointing out that it's a natural progression to get to know each other as people so you feel more comfortable with each other and more interested in each other, too. I think people are always interested in other people. We'd like to know, we kind of find each other fascinating, don't we? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, yeah, it doesn't have to be an outside-the-group friend interest, really. Although oftentimes that happens, at least your acquaintances. But it's a natural progression. We dealt with all kinds of people all over the world, and Rotarians are all kinds of people all over the world. But we're not an American group. We are a global group. There's a Rotary Club wherever it is you are. There's one that's reasonable distance from you. And if not, you should start one. But there is a natural progression of comfort as the process goes on, because we've dealt with each other and we know what to expect. And that's partially being comfortable with each other, too. You know what to expect. You have confidence in your fellow teammate, and you're comfortable with them. You find them kind of interesting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is an interesting point, that in addition to celebrating and to getting comfortable with each other and to be defining what success looks like, in this day and age, got some social media overlap to this comfortable part, right? Yeah. Because you need an atmosphere of trust, as Hussein says. You need an atmosphere of trust to work together towards the goal. An atmosphere of trust. There you have it. That encompasses the respect and the civility rules and the familiarity. An atmosphere of trust. Good way of putting it, Hussein. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that you don't think about, at least that everybody thinks about, I do now, but it's something to consider, is that when you have an atmosphere of trust, it might not be a secret group, but you're in the process, right? And the process is kind of messy. And then people have an opinion about what's happening, or maybe an opinion about their fellow team member. And the opinion might be kind of permanent, or it might be for the moment. Mm-hmm. And I actually enforce a privacy rule. I don't let people text and like that while they're sitting there, blog and text and things. A, it's distracting. B, yes, people are saying it's rude. The new generation doesn't seem to think it to be so rude. And rudeness is an intent, right? But it's certainly distracting, and you're not with us if you're texting someone else. Mm-hmm. Or blogging it, or whatever it is that you're doing on your mobile device, right? Mm-hmm. And you've breached kind of the sanctity of the group when you do that. You've breached the privacy. And a lot of times, people sitting there at the moment that their fingers are working write something that's their opinion, and it kind of comes out wrong on paper, right? Or it's something they thought in their head at that moment that they seemed to have flowed through their fingers and they put it into writing, right? But it was just what they thought at that moment. And it comes out badly. So I have a social media moratorium with groups. Even if we're not discussing the Kentucky Fried Chicken formula, which is a secret, it's like a joke, right? And it's not so private, but it is in the process. Mm-hmm. And I honestly think that opinions should be thought through before they are sent out into the world, never to be captured again and to be read for all time. Right? And I know that people don't do it, but I think you should. I think it's a good habit. I think not only shouldn't you sit there and text what's being said or your opinion or something, it comes out rudely on paper. I think you should reread what you send before you hit send. And I know that most people don't do that, but I sure do. I reread it. Before I send a reply to an email or an email first, I reread it. Mm-hmm. I do. I think about it. And I take out any, well, first of all, I take out any humor, right? Because it doesn't come out well on paper. Mm-hmm. I read it from the perspective of the recipient or from a third party reading it later on down the line. Yeah. So I think it's important to have a moratorium on social media within the room. Mm-hmm. Because when you get out and you get home and you're sitting there on your sofa texting, you've got the benefit of having had the entire group experience, right? And the benefit of a little bit of time and thought. And you're not just spewing something out there. Yes, I do advocate, Elizabeth and others are saying, to have a spokesperson for the group. Yes, I very much advocate that. If somebody's going to be interested in the group or the outcome, it's important to have a spokesperson and not have everybody talking about it because it'll all kind of get muddled. You need to agree on a spokesperson and agree basically on what they're going to say. Mm-hmm. Yes, oftentimes it is the leader, the spokesperson. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So privacy of the process. Michael and others are saying also privacy of the identity of the participants. Sometimes that's important. Sometimes people are members, for example, of a cultural or an ethnic group, and they've got a private opinion, but it's not the opinion of the group, which is strongly held, and therefore they're willing to help, but they'd really like not to have their privacy breached and everybody know that they're helping. Mm-hmm. People are saying it's a secret. Well, yeah, it's anonymous because for some reason you don't want the whole world to know. It's kind of like Alcoholics Anonymous, right? And that's pretty much an international group. It's an organization where people join and get together and talk to each other. I think still done in person, yeah, at least greatly. And they talk about their addiction to alcohol. And they talk about why and like that. And they take turns. But they don't want everybody to know they're a member of that group. It's kind of unflattering, right? Because it is an admission that you're an alcoholic, or at least you were. Mm-hmm. And they say that you're always an alcoholic once you are one, so... But it's an admission that you're not interested in having everybody in the entire universe know, especially like employers and things. Mm-hmm. And so it's anonymous, AA, Alcoholics Anonymous. There's other groups like that. And perhaps people in our group are not interested in the whole universe knowing that they're there. Mm-hmm. But they have taken an interest, and their input is valuable. It's very interesting when someone truly needs to be anonymous because they come from some sort of a group or a background that is opposed to what you're trying, but they personally think it's a good idea. It's interesting to hear their perspective and hear how the group they belong to is reacting. Mm-hmm. It's very interesting to do that. It'll enhance the outcome if you listen very carefully and get that opinion. Mm-hmm. So in an atmosphere of trust to work towards the goal, according to Hussein and others, absolutely true. Now, if we don't get the physical comfort, we're going to run out of time. And yes, I don't know if I'm going to make we'll try to do one recipe. This is getting kind of silly. We have a wonderful discussion, and thank you all for being here, for all your participation. And then I promised the two potluck recipes at the opening, and then we hardly ever get to two of them. We're going to try to get to one today. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about physical comfort, because it really does impact the group. If you are physically uncomfortable, you're not going to want to come again. Because it was a real pain in the posterior, right? Yeah. And you want to make it as easy and as convivial and as pleasant as possible so that people, it's not a chore. People really want to come because they're getting somewhere and it's important. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's food, yes. People are going, and there's food, yes. We're going to try to get to that. We've got a few minutes more for this, and then I'm going to try to get to one of the recipes. Okay. So as Janice says, everyone is more amenable when they're comfortable. That's the ticket. We all know that. We're more amenable when we're comfortable. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Patrick and others are saying the actual location is the key and that you need to have a location compromise so it's central. Mm-hmm. I personally, if we're not sure and there's not a set meeting place, for example, I take kind of a little survey where people would like to meet, kind of a location and a venue and like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So location is important. Mm-hmm. Everyone's more amenable when they're comfortable. Exactly. Cheryl and others are talking about plenty of comfortable chairs. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And all this, also the acoustics. And the acoustics are kind of important because you might pick a place to meet or even a Skype or whatever. You don't have to necessarily physically be in the room, although it would be nice for the food, right? But you need to have something that is quiet, that we can think on, that we can be, whether we can be at for a while too. I mean, a restaurant won't do. Mm-hmm. You need plenty of comfortable chairs. Well, it might do for a short meeting. Okay, I take restaurant back. You need the acoustics to be good, so we can all hear each other. Let's face it. People are talking about background noise and about having a roving microphone. And asking the speaker, for example, if you have a speaker or something, to repeat the question that he or she is answering. Mm-hmm. So acoustics. And I think if you have a big group, I like a roving microphone. One of those that you walk around and people kind of raise their hand and then we get to them and they make their comments or ask a question. I kind of like a roving microphone. If you're not going to have that, I think it's good to repeat the question, too, that you're answering. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Carl and others are talking about distributing written information before we arrive so that we can prepare. Mm-hmm. I'm very big on that. I think that if you're going to have something, especially something kind of complicated or a spreadsheet or something, you need to be able to look at it ahead of time. Tony and others are talking for physical comfort, that you need a place that has security so that you feel safe going there and sitting there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a good point. I've been in situations like at night in an empty office building and stuff. It feels kind of like, you know, maybe this was not so wise, that we should have picked a more secure location, a location that's, well, less tempting. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Tony says that is not what he meant. That he meant not the security of the location so much, but that you need to have security in the room in case there's a fight. Mm-hmm. I don't usually handle that kind of stuff, but if you think so, and if you think you need it, you probably do. And I can see the point that you might need to enforce the civility rules with an authority figure, for example. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a good point, too. Ellen and others are saying that in addition to everything else, to make the group more comfortable, you need to limit the number of guests and require advance notice. Limit the number of guests, because then that creates a who are you and why have you been brought here, right? Mm-hmm. Limit the number of guests and require advance notice. And this advance notice goes out to everybody, right? Not just the leader, unless it's some sort of a group where guests are frequent. But that's not usually true. Especially, you need to have advance notice if the guest is really being brought in as an expert to give an opinion. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes a guest is just your ride. And they're going to read a book in the background there. But oftentimes they want to participate, and we need to limit the number and kind of require advance notice of that. Mm-hmm. So that would make the group more comfortable and have less interlopers, right? At least the feel of it. Helen says to have to make the group more comfortable, you need to assign seating to separate exclusionary cliques. You need to assign seating to separate exclusionary cliques. Yeah. Sometimes you have that people are talking amongst themselves, right? And they're giggling and like that. And it's like, well, share it with the group. I don't usually assign seats, but I've done it in my day if we need to kind of mix up who you're sitting next to. You can also play actually it's in the last book. You can play the game where every time we have a break, we're going to not take our same seat. We're going to switch around seats so that we all get to sit next to somebody else, somebody new. Yeah, I like the game where you do the question and we all answer it, or you go around and you meet someone new and talk to them. Very fascinating, and it's a good way to make the group more comfortable. And then as our last thought, Bella and a lot of others are saying that one of the ways to make the group comfortable is to have plenty of food and drink. Yeah. And, of course, recipes. Yes, we've left 5 minutes for this. Are you proud of me? Yeah. And Recipe for Peace Now really advocates that because it's a networking tool. Now, you might have food in the room because you're hungry, but it's really because it's a tool for getting to know each other. You need a timeout. You need a little bit of cool down, or you just need a break. It's been a while. Good to break bread together. Good to eat together. Yeah. Gives us something to talk about we're not mad at, right? And a potluck is lots of fun. So, yes, I'm going to say the very important thing that I always say before we talk about food. If you're going to have food, you need to take a survey. You need to find out if anybody has a food allergy, a prohibition to a certain type of food, or something that they don't eat, for like a religious prohibition, right? And that needs to be circulated and respected. Mm-hmm. Also, when people bring food, they need to list what's in it. Not just say what it is, meatloaf, but actually say what's in it so I can run my eye down it and see if I can eat it. I also think the host should have at least one safe recipe. What's a safe recipe? Not too many ingredients. We've taken the survey. It looks like everybody can eat them. And ingredients that my people, your people, wherever you are, because this is a global show, would have eaten before. They know if it's okay to eat it. Yeah. So that's the safe recipe. And then we can have an adventure recipe. An adventure recipe is not something that someone in the room is allergic to and we know about it or can't eat. But it looks like everybody can eat it, but it needs to be clearly marked. Now, I'm going to do unusually. Usually we do the safe recipe if we're running out of time. But the safe one today is tomato and chicken fettuccine. It's a little more involved. I'm going to do the adventure recipe. Now, why is this an adventure recipe? Mm-hmm. Well, it's lots of fun to eat, and you can take it, and it's served over rice, and it's easy to deal with. But it's full of seafood. And seafood, a lot of people are allergic to. You got to know that. You got to have taken the survey, right? Because if you're really allergic to it, you can't stand the smell. And if everyone looks like they can eat it, and we've taken the survey, and we said we're coming with seafood stew, is that okay? We still need to list what is in it because sometimes people are allergic to a certain type of seafood and we don't want to make anybody sick. But this is delicious. In my area, we see a lot of fish. And so it's easy it's not too expensive. It might be quite expensive wherever you are. But you want to modify this, then get rid of the seafood and substitute vegetables and chicken and things. Yeah, that would make it more of a safe recipe. So we're going to preheat our oven. Because we need it to be hot. It's about 400. Mm-hmm. Then we're good. This is a seafood stew. It is actually just delicious. It's like a seafood casserole, kind of. But to me, a casserole has crumbs and cheese on top, and this doesn't. So we're going to have a nice big yellow pepper. We're going to seed it and devein it and coarse chop it. Going to do the same to a red one, the red bell pepper. And let's have a nice orange one, too. Yeah. You can use green if you'd like. Green's a little bit bitter, more bitter. So I like to use the lighter ones, the yellow, the red, and the orange if you can get them. Let's have quite a few nice ripe tomatoes, those little tomatoes, like a couple of dozen of them if you're going to use the fresh ones. You want to know the honest truth? I'm going to use a can. I really am. I'm going to use two big, like 16-ounce, maybe they were even bigger than that, cans of whole tomatoes that I'm going to drain. You know how sometimes we use the juice? No, we're going to drain it and kind of pat them dry. I might even have three big cans because it needs some nice tomato color to it. Let's have six garlic cloves. I like a lot of garlic. People say I use too much. Use less if you think that. We're going to mince them up. It's going to be kind of garlicky. This is true. We're going to need a couple tablespoons of olive oil. Probably a little bit of dried oregano. This will give it a little extra taste, like a teaspoon. Let's get ourselves a nice big sweet onion. I prefer the sweet ones, like a Vidalia. Going to peel it and chop it up. 2 cups of vegetable stock. If you've got fish stock, that's okay too. I think it's too salty. I like to use either vegetable stock, or if that's not really available, chicken stock's fine. But it needs to be light in color and not too salty. Let's put a bay leaf in here. Remember to fish it out. And now let's have a pound of whitefish, some sort of something that's kind of firm. Maybe a little more than a pound. We're going to skin it and cut it into chunks. Pound of shrimp, peeled and deveined. Let's have a pound of squid. If you can't find squid in your area, don't use the kind that's in a can. It's just disgusting. Put in more shrimp and more whitefish. Especially the fish makes it nice and firm. Okay, so we've got our oven preheated. We're going to take all those peppers and we're going to saute them in the oil until they are somewhat cooked through with the garlic. And not soft, because we are going to bake this, but kind of immersed in the garlic and the oil. Now we're going to drizzle it with some more oil, maybe some oregano. And we're going to throw the peppers themselves into the oven for about 20 minutes. Yeah. And if you'd like, you can take the skins off because they've separated. Maybe you want to leave bigger pieces if you're going to do it, and then chop it. I like the skins. I don't think it's a bad thing. So we've made the peppers and the garlic and the oregano kind of put together already. We're going to add the tomatoes. If you used real tomatoes, because you're better than I am, you needed to have put them in with the oven because they needed to cook. I'm using already cooked ones, essentially speaking. They're stewed there in a big can, so I can put them in now because they're already soft, and they're going to soak up into the juice. We're going to take the oil, some oil, and put it in a nice big pot. Put the onion in, stir it around till it is all nice and fragrant and soft. We're going to then add the peppers and the garlic mixture that we just did. And we're going to add the stock, and we're going to add the bay leaf, and we're going to bring the whole thing to boil. You notice that we're not putting in the fish until the last minute. It's because fish and shrimp and like that don't take long to cook. So we've got all boiling, yum, yum, yum. Stir in the fish and the seafood. Reduce the heat, 10 minutes, 15 maybe, until everything is cooked through and the fish have turned, and the shrimp have turned pink. Go fish out that bay leaf. And make sure everything's cooked through. And yum, 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 you are done. It is fast to do. Well, all right, the roasting takes a little bit of while, but you can prepare everything else while you're doing it. It is delicious. It is the adventure recipe. It is full of things that people might be allergic to. We serve rice on the side. I know George always votes for mashed potatoes, but I like rice too. Rice or couscous or something delicious. You could even serve pasta. This is true. I usually put it on the side so people can choose. Mm-hmm. Delicious, fast. If you wanted to use a different protein other than fish, you like chunks of chicken, you need to brown them first, of course, right? You can't just throw them into the broth because you can't cook chicken that way. It needs to be cooked through first, pork and things like that too. Mm-hmm. This is really a seafood recipe more than anything. And that is our adventure recipe. My friends, we are out of time. Yes. Thank you. Thank you for coming. Thank you for being here. Thank you for all of your participation. Thank you for listening. Mm-hmm. If you want to find us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. Website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Mm-hmm. Prior shows archived on the website. Thank you for being here. Thank you for listening. And please do come again. Bye-bye.